Hello, everyone. This is David Kohanek with Job Search Digest. And today I'm speaking with Pam Lassiter, the principal of Lassiter Consulting, a nationwide career consulting firm. And Pam has about 30 years of experience of doing this, working with both clients as well as job seekers or career changers. And we've asked her to share her thoughts with us today. Pam is also the author of The New Job Security, a book about career management. And Pam, welcome. We appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
So before we get too deep into the questions, I guess it would be interesting to hear your thought on this job market. What are you seeing today?
Uncertainty and ambiguity. If it's of any consolation, it's not a lot different from some job markets that I've seen before. I've been through four recessions in my practice, and at the beginning of the 1980s, we were going through a lot of similar angst and ambiguity, and it wouldn't surprise me if that wasn't a little bit worse of a time. When you're in the middle of a change, you don't really care that it was worse earlier, but we'll get our way out of this. It's just not going to be fast, and it's to the well-prepared and the people with a good strategy that the success will go.
Very good. So you've got some experience in the up markets and the down markets, and I think you'll be a great resource here as we work through this. So how important, from a job seeker standpoint, or somebody who may be in a position but thinking about making a change, how important is mindset during times like these?
Well, that's a great question, because mindset controls everything. Let me give you an example. If we don't feel like we are of value or on top of our game, we can project that really easily. And I was talking to a president once of a company that was complaining about somebody that took four handshakes to get into him and finally got to him on a phone call, spent 5 minutes talking about himself, the job seeker did, and 5 minutes, you know, that's a long time, especially on a phone call. And then ended up with saying, our mutual connection said you'd have some ideas for a guy like me. Really irritated the president incredibly. Like me is a reflection of a mindset of somebody that doesn't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And doesn't really care. It's waiting for other people to take care of them. And that doesn't present well. So mindset and focus tied together with strategy is an important part of distinguishing who you are.
Okay, so the lesson learned there is when talking and talking to folks and networking with people is the, what point of view are you taking? If you're taking the world revolves around me point of view, it's probably not going to help you in your networking process. Is that right?
Yeah, very insightful comment. In fact, I had 3 points I was going to leave your members with, and that was one of the three. It's not about me. Finding the right work is not about you. That may sound counterintuitive, but the more you think about you, the less the market is interested in you. The market is interested in themselves. You're talking to a partner at a private equity or a venture capital firm about how what you're looking for in a job and how you are interested in doing these sorts of things. You know, that's a vague interest, but the primary interest is how they are going to make exits. Mm-hmm. How are we going to get out of the deals we are in successfully in a down market? And if you start talking about that side and the areas that you have helped work on that have made that happen, they're going to pay a lot better attention. The mindset there is that it's not about you, it's about them. And it's talking in their frame. The new job security, I talk about market for mutual benefit. And that has to do with your resume and your elevator story and all your communications. If you're talking about their best interest and their buzzwords, which you can pick up in the job listing that you've got on your board, you can pick up the right vocabulary right there. And if you start feeding that back to them with profitability, that puts you in a very different position, in a very different light, from the point of view of the partner that's making the decisions.
Well, and we've said that just time and time again in our communications with our members is, look, firms are going to hire to fill a gap. And those gaps are, they're not static, because with every new portfolio company, every new financing challenge, every new sales challenge, those are all opportunities that then create something where the right person at the right time with the right skill set, somebody that they can plug in right then and there, hit the ground running and solve their problem, they're going to hire that person. It's not going to be, and it may be a situation before they've even thought about the position or a job description. What they know is they have a problem now that needs to be fixed.
And you're onto something. Yeah. It's the gap concept. Let me broaden that a little bit to the concept of pain. P-A-I-N. My southern accent can put more vowels in there than typically needs to. So looking for the pain within a company. And that a gap may imply a job that's coming. If you go a little bit earlier upstream, and where are they feeling the pain? And they're around some of the areas you're talking about, the financing, the deals. If you look at regulatory too, there's going to be lots of pain points that are coming down the pike, to use an alliteration, that are going to create jobs. And if you start thinking about where is the pain, especially with keeping up in front of some of these regulatory requirements that are coming through Congress right now, and if you can be the expert or have some ideas, nobody's even going to have an experience. There are going to be jobs created around these and enforcing them in compliance as well. So it's looking at how the marketplace is shifting and focusing on some areas of expertise that you can offer. The rule of thumb I'm passing on to my clients now is jack of all trades, master of two. And which two are people going to think about you when they're facing that type of pain or problem to be solved? And that's where work gets created before it often even gets to job openings. So you're right about the timing and getting the conversations going.
Well, and you make such a great point about understanding what's happening in the industry. In private equity, hedge funds, investment banking, there's been more change in the last 12 months than we saw in years and years prior to that. And your example of new regulations is a great one. You know, somebody who understands what's happening in hedge fund regulation, for instance, is on top of that and really diving in and translating, you know, how does this new regulation going to change how hedge funds are able to market their funds? Is a significant knowledge base that every hedge fund has to deal with now.
Exactly. And you don't even have to be an expert yet. The first person that said, I understand Sarbanes-Oxley, got work.
Yeah.
And that person became an expert. You have to be 10 minutes in front of the next expert. People are becoming experts all of the time. And it's impossible to be an expert constantly because things change so quickly. So that becomes our challenge as a professional to stay in front of what the changes are and to at least claim ownership, to say I have experience. Even having read the regulations coming through Congress will put you ahead of 95% of the pack right now.
Right.
And then saying, interviewing people, talking to people about them, will give you a body of opinions and expertise that you can leverage early on before it turns into job listings. That's an example. You can hit any other place of pain too. It's not just government regulations, but there are a lot of things around accounting and compliance and funding and tax that will be hitting across the board, all three of your markets.
Well, and the importance, of course, if you're going to be a player in your market, you're going to have to stay on top of what's happening. But in addition to that, we see this in the jobs that are getting posted on our site. You can start to see shifts by the keywords that are included in job descriptions.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
Yes. I thought you'd been reading my book. I write about that. When my clients are developing resumes, I take a little bit different cut than everybody else. I use product marketing, and so you'll hear that vocabulary coming across. I have them start with identifying who are my target markets. And let's say venture capital firms are a target market, for example. Then you can start looking at your job listings and start getting recurring terms out of the job listings. I don't care what city it's in. I don't even care if it's a year old, because the needs aren't going to change too quickly and they're going to be very similar regardless of geography. And start analyzing what's popping up in these 10 job listings that I like. If somebody gives me 10 job listings they like, I can tell them what their resume ought to say without being an expert in their field. And that's something that your members can do too. Analyze, take apart what they're saying on your board and start analyzing the recurring terms and slap it back in the resume tied with profitability. You'll see some formats in the new job security. So when people are skimming, they will see bold-faced, their words reflected back to them, tied with the profitability you have hopefully brought to your firms and in your job experience or in your education on research projects that will be of value to them, so they can skim it quickly, 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
How's this person going to make me money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we offer that same advice in the cover letter as well. I mean, it makes perfect sense that if the cover letter is on top of the resume, that's the first thing that's going to get skimmed. And we always say, you know, don't plan on anybody reading your letter and your resume word for word. And that's the importance of those key concepts, the bolding, the formatting, because you're trying to draw the eye to say, yeah, this person seems to be a good fit for what we have.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's shift here. When somebody is looking at making a change, what approach do you recommend for them in terms of developing their job search plan?
Okay, a change within industry or outside industry? You want to stick within industry to start off with?
Yeah, a good differentiation. Yeah, let's start within the industry.
Okay. My referral triangle. Simple answer. If you think, visualize a triangle in front of you and put yourself in the middle, the fat part of the triangle. There are three ways that people typically leave their firms or their companies. And it's through the points of the triangle: vendor, competitor, customer. And that goes for venture, private equity, or hedge as well. So let me talk that through for a second. Vendors, what's coming into your firm? You don't have to touch these people to be of value to them. Let's say there's some software your firm's been buying, and it has to do with modeling, and you're interested in software. So that's a conversation you could be having right there about people that sell into companies are very well connected, by the way. So even if you don't want to work for their company, they can tell you what venture firms are growing, who isn't, who's having trouble, because they're in there all the time. So not only may you be interested in them as an end, they can become a means to marketplace information, too.
Wow. I was just going to say, what a great insight, because you're exactly right. Those vendors, those salespeople, it's mm-hmm. their job to understand what's happening in the industry. And more likely than not, they're going after some of the hotter firms, the emerging firms, and are probably going to have contacts in many of those.
They may well. And if they're good and smart, they'll figure out if they help you land your next job. You can't make any guarantees, but you can certainly tell them that if I land at one of these firms, I'd be delighted to have you in for a conversation. So you can't promise anything, but they can see, they can help themselves if they help you. And that's that second of the five strategies I teach about the marketing for mutual benefit, what's in it for them. You can help point that out to them if they aren't getting it on their own. And they will know the companies that are hot and the ones that aren't. There are other vendors are like the law firms and the accounting and tax firms. So think about the vendor side. The competitor side, it's an interesting sad to think about as far as venture capital is going right now, too, because, as you know, the number of deals that have made successful exits and the amount of dollars raised has really gone down substantially in the past 10 years. So how you look wisely if you're staying within industry is smart. If you are with a big VC fund right now, for example, do you want to think about a specialty fund? Do you want to think about a specialty niche of work within another fund? Do you want to see if you can create something within your current firm that they aren't doing? Maybe they haven't started clean tech yet. Maybe they should. I love the word should. If you can see what the competition is doing and your own firm's not doing it, maybe they should be. Maybe their lunch is going to be eaten because they aren't. So you have a conversation that's not about you. It's about the opportunity in the marketplace. So look at the competition with other firms as well as, is there an area for growth within your own firm? So got vendors and competitors. Should I talk, you mean talk about the customers for a second?
Sure, sure.
Okay. Now, the customer side for private equity, VC, or hedge funds, where does the money come from is the question to ask yourself. Should we be talking, are there institutional investors out there that might be of interest? Are there actually even LPs, limited partners? Are there acquirers? Are there strategics, as in companies that this function could be embedded within? So it's thinking more creatively about the client side, the customer, where the money is coming from, and are there niches for me within that, or getting back to should, are there niches that should be developed within some of these strategics or some of the maybe publicly held companies are investing in your hedge fund too. So maybe there should be some niches around there. Easy flip over often is business development. If you're a deal maker on one side, you can be a deal maker within a company as well. And so you're just working back with the types of companies or firms or portfolio companies that you've come from. Is that making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that, it's what are those translatable skills, those transferable skills, I should say, where you are a deal maker, and it's a function of then saying, here's where I've got that experience, and here is where I can translate that into this new niche, and especially in a case where, like you said, where your firm should be operating.
Yeah,
that's it.
Or where you should be, even if your firm isn't.
Yep.
So,
now, let's for that mid-career job seeker, somebody who's got 10 years of experience, 5, 10, maybe even 15 years of experience, how do they best position? How do they best market themselves, especially in an environment that we're in right now?
Good question. A lot of the people I work with, and I think your members too, will often come to you saying, I haven't looked for a job before in my whole career.
Yeah, absolutely. We get, just so you know, Pam, we get a lot of that. We get folks who have said, look, right out of school, I was recruited, and it's just been upward trajectory. And unless somebody was mid-career in the early 80s, they really haven't seen something like this. I mean, we obviously had, the dot-com bust, in the early 2000s, but that wasn't this. This is something different.
No, that was very sector dependent, and this is universal across all sectors. It's, as I was talking to you earlier about, this is actually an opportunity. So if this is the first time you've either been blindsided or needed to make a change in your career, the one word I can pass on to you is congratulations. What I see happening with a lot of people is what I call the pinball career. And you can see, I write about this in my book on how to control it too. Pinballing is reacting to what hits you. You may be getting promotions inside of your firm, which is great. There's nothing wrong with pinball careers. It's that you're never thinking strategically, is this the right move for me? right now, given my interest and how I want to develop my career, because a recruiter calls and it's convenient. Your boss says, we want you to take over X. And sure, why not? And so you're reacting to external forces. If you're in mid-career and looking for a job for the first time, congratulations. You're going to get to shape what happens to you next. And it's not by chasing jobs all the time. Jobs are an invaluable source of information, and they're a great way to find out where there's smoke in a company. So you can certainly respond, but I suggest that you also develop the jack of all trades, master of two. What's your area of expertise that you can talk to companies about, even if they don't have, quote, job openings, close quotes? If you talk to people about compliance and about regulatory knowledge, about what's coming through Congress, if you can save a company or firm money or make them money, they will create work for you to do. Now notice I said work. I didn't say job. It may start with a project. It may start with a consulting assignment. But then you can back in. You've got the camel's nose in the tent. If you can get yourself in and get to know the people and get to know where the pain is, you can often create jobs as well. So you can start by analyzing what target markets do I belong in and what are their needs. And then the third step, how do I package myself to respond to these needs? Conversations to be had all over.
Well, and your example of taking on some project work, and you know, I've said this before, it's great to be test driven in this mm-hmm. process, because the hiring decision is so different after you've completed a successful project that was targeted at a very specific pain. It's your mm-hmm. opportunity to really showcase what you can do, and if you can get your foot in the door and you can get that short-term project, and in some extreme cases you may even do it on spec, right? You might say, look, let me do this project, you tell me the value that I've added. But at the end of that process, if you've done a great job, the firm has already discussed on the inside that they want to bring you on board, because assuming there's more work like that or more problems to be solved, you're the obvious choice at that point.
Yeah, oh, you're onto a big secret there too. So that's a great idea to bring up. I don't use volunteering casually. There may be if you're between jobs now, there may be a place for you to think of one firm. You can only do one of these at a time because you have a real campaign to be running outside of this. But to volunteer to do something with a company, let's say they have antiquated modeling software and that you happen to have a better, faster, cheaper, more streamlined way. Not only can you back into that company, they should be paying you with it, but you're not leading with that conversation. You're leading with improved results and decision-making in your conversation. And if you actually help them install some improved software, you probably have to talk to every partner there is in that firm. You're interviewing them about how they use it and what their needs are. You're talking to their admins, and talk about the most powerful group in any firm is the administrators, because they have access to the people that you want to talk to. And so you have to interview a lot of people. So it's finding a problem. And if you need to back in through one volunteer project, fine. Better yet, get paid for it. But you worry about that at the end. Get them hooked on the need and the problem to be solved, and you'd be happy to give them a hand and help them think it through so they don't have to spend too much time on it.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. Great advice.
Well, notice how I also packaged it and what was in it for them. You don't have to spend time thinking about this. Let me talk to you about your needs, and then we'll make it happen.
Yeah. Yep.
So their need is no time. Don't take up too much time. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's fine. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit here. So, Pam, we obviously are bringing job listings to our membership base and aggregating every day all the job openings that are coming across the web. But those are the advertised openings from the recruiting firms, from the hiring firms directly. What about looking for opportunities outside of the job boards?
Well, not only are the job boards, and in particular aggregation, a good use of your time for marketplace information, there's a whole food chain that exists around a job being created. You can find it in my third strategy in the new job security. I call it, the whole strategy is stop looking for jobs. It really ends up looking for problems to be solved. Because where do jobs get created? They start early on with problems to be solved. It can either be too much work, too little work, work has changed, and we'll try to handle it internally. And that may be the first stab. And then after a while, the pain gets too great. We don't have the time, the expertise, the ability to do this. So let's start thinking about what we should be doing besides this. Bosses don't typically like to bring new people in because it takes time. It takes them off goal. They have to think about other stuff. That's not what they really want to be thinking about. They just want the job to be done. And so if you can be developing conversations early on with people in the middle level of the firms that you're interested in about how are you handling this latest change in X? What are you doing about acquisitions now that that seems to be the primary exit strategy for companies or new portfolio companies? So it's talking to them about the problems that are evolving, hearing where the gaps are, as you were talking about earlier, that we really need more work around business development. We need some alliance partners to do this. Can I give you a hand with that? I've got some ideas around that. So it's just sounds like a casual conversation to start off with. But in reality, you've thought ahead of time. You know your target markets, getting back to our earlier conversation about what's going on, where are the pressure points, and you start basically leading the witness towards some of those pressure points and asking them how they're handling this. Mm-hmm. And you can say, if you do have some ideas, why don't we set up a time next week to get together and we can go over some of these. Now, maybe it's around analysis, and maybe it's around modeling. You're not giving them all the solutions and ideas up front. You want them to buy the whole cow, not just the milk. And so you're leading them forward about how you might be able to put some structure, a framework in place for them to think about this, and engaging them and how it's going to benefit them, and talking about the future and the results, not it's about a job for me, fantastic. And so you get them engaged and you put as much work on yourself as possible. Let me follow up on that. Let me set up that meeting. Let me get some ideas together for you. Because in reality, you're keeping control. Once they say, oh, I'll think about it or I'll keep my ears open, things die. So How can you keep control and keep moving the conversation about solving problems forward, ideally before it gets to that job opening posting so everybody else can see it and everybody else can respond? Mm-hmm. So you use the job openings for analysis and still you respond to the ones that are interesting and engaging where you're a direct hit, but you don't have to wait for that alone.
You know, what's interesting about that too, it reminds me of my years as an executive recruiter. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, And I wasn't the only. I think this is probably the standard approach for executive recruiters is, you know, we would do everything we could to not work with HR.
Got it.
And why? Because HR could say no much easier than they could say yes. And mm-hmm. But on top of that, what I found was oftentimes before the job description has been put in place, before the requisition has been put in place in a larger firm, you are finding that there are pain points in the hiring manager. So a partner is concerned mm-hmm. about a portfolio company. They need specific help with it. They haven't even had the conversation with someone in HR yet.
Nope.
But what they can't...
they're not likely to.
Yeah, well, and it's a question of, you know, this may turn into a full-time role, but just like you said, you know, do they really want to hire somebody? That takes time, that takes effort. It also takes I've got to fill out the form and write the job description, you know, everything that sort of goes with that. However, if you had that that targeted resource that could just say, you know what, let me plug in, let me solve this immediate problem for you. Let me structure a plan of action for you. You know, maybe that's all it is. It's not even actually the implementation side. It's just let me do the thinking for you. Let me present a plan to you. You know, you've actually, you know, sort of beat them to the punch and shown up right time, right place.
Exactly. As long as you're not giving away your golden nuggets that they need to retain you to get. So you're teasing them and moving them forward. And you're totally right about human resources. A lot of the venture capital firms had human resource managers on before the internet bubble burst. Those people typically don't exist. There may be 12 left in the city of Boston, for example.
Right.
And you know where the partners say they get their next hire? Out of their BlackBerry.
Yeah.
So the challenge becomes, how do I get in that BlackBerry? And it's by talking to people. And this is where you can find the smoke on Job Search Digest, where the companies might be, who's in the game, who's thinking, who's recruiting, who's out there. You can get great conversations off of just seeing where the action is trending in the marketplace, which you can do on your site. Or LinkedIn is helpful for getting some handshakes now, too.
Mm-hmm.
So if your members aren't there already, go on and get there.
LinkedIn is a requirement. I mean, there's no other way to say it. It's the, you know, LinkedIn above all others. And you know, we're investigating deeper the activity on Facebook. You know, the Zoom Infos of the world, which is more of a very targeted database kind of system rather than social networking. But you know, the Facebooks and the Twitter, there's opportunity there. Very strategic time spent there can pay off. But LinkedIn, gotta be there, gotta be in there.
And so, got to embed in your profile the keywords you found in your ad research, in your job listings research.
It's part of your personal marketing plan. I mean, those keywords that align with your skills and experience and proving that you can do the job, that becomes part of the elevator pitch, that becomes part of the cover letter, the resume, your LinkedIn profile, and if you are doing the social activity, it becomes part of your discussions as well.
I just finished 23 interviews with thought leaders in the career management field for the book revision I have coming out, and the social media people were all talking about the passive recruiting going on the sites now. So this is where the keywords come in handy, because it lets people find you.
Right.
And the groups that you're in, it lets people find you. So be in relevant groups to the private equity hedge or venture capital world, or form one. Get your own group.
Yeah. Well, that actually leads to my next question. What tips do you have for high impact networking?
Well, that's a great question, because there's so much low-impact, ineffective networking going on. Well, you know, networking has just gotten smeared all over about, I think, of peanut butter about a quarter of an inch thick on giant slices of bread and without a lot of thought. And it can turn people off as well. What I have seen evolve in a lot of areas is the subtle message of, what can you do for me? And that's not how I teach networking. And the fourth strategy in my book is build sustainable networks. That's the operative term, sustainable. How do you get people looking forward to your calls and emails and returning them and soliciting them? And that all starts by, what's in it for them? What are you doing to help them? Which may seem counterintuitive in a job search, but it's how you get people to return your calls, that you're helping them. And it doesn't have to be all professional, although it's great if you can give them some leads to a new potential company or an acquisition candidate. I've helped people with everything from restaurants to camps their kids go to whatever. Who's a good doctor? that's the toughest question of all these days, and how to help them personally get you into their relationships and lives just as well as professionally. So I approach networking by where do I need the network, and then how can I help them? It's not talking to everybody that's dragonfly networking that's skittering across the top of everything. It's where should the handshakes be, and what can I do to help them along the way? So the handshake A that gets me to B feels nurtured and can recommend me, even though I may not have known them well to start off with. Mm-hmm. And so with B to C and so on. So
well,
it takes some time.
And the word you use there, nurtured, I mean, what a great word. From nurturing the relationship that you're building and nurturing your network by adding value instead of just, you know, attending the networking event, collecting as many cards as you can, you know, doing the obligatory, hey, it was great meeting you yesterday at the breakfast, but going deeper than that. I think of like those networking events, or, you know, whether it's a venture capital breakfast or a hedge fund summit, you know, instead of having 50 business cards, I think it's much more important to have five, and the back of that business card just filled with bullet points of what you picked up in your conversation with that person, so you can do some meaningful follow-up with them.
Oh, you're right on, David. Very good. It's not volume. It's quality, and it's the follow-up, too. I agree. So many people will throw their cards at me, either before or after a meeting, and that doesn't do a lot for me, because I come home. You ever come home and pulled out a bunch of cards from your pocket and looked at, who in the world were these people?
Yeah.
And so if I have something specific, I will write it on the card myself. So when that person pulls my card out of my pocket, they will see that they said, you're really passionate about what you do. And so I will write in quotes, passionate about what I did. Because she mentioned, let's have coffee next week. So I'll call her, and that'll be the trigger, because she will have seen that, and it'll probably be in her contact manager if she scanned her cards in. So that's, you're right. It's the quality and the focus and the follow through.
Well, and again, I'll lean on my executive recruiting effort before. I used to go to industry events, and first of all, I thought it was interesting that I wouldn't see 10 other executive recruiters at the industry events. To me, it made no sense, but it was great. It was a competitive advantage. So I would go to these events, and I would have meaningful conversations with people and fill up business cards, sometimes front and back, with information about this person. I could establish the relationship. They weren't looking for a job at the time. I was actively going out and getting this passive candidate right where, you know, sort of this is going to sound bad, but it was the, you know, shooting fish in a barrel analogy, right?
Yeah.
And I had clients that had very specific hiring requirements. Those people, whether in my network or not yet, I was going to fill up my network. And the way I did was I would dive into that barrel and talk to the fish. And it was, it made perfect sense. And I think from a career changer, a job seeker perspective, if you start thinking like those folks hiring, whether it's the hiring firm, you know, the particular manager that has that problem to solve, or the executive recruiter who says, I've got a client with a hiring need and I'm trying to find the right person because that's how I get paid. If you start thinking that way, and I guess this maybe I'm shifting all the way back up to the mindset discussion, but if you start thinking that way, it changes your perspective and it changes the value you bring to your network.
And it changes the attention they pay to you as well, because you're operating out of their best interest. It's okay to go back to the mindset point, because it does drive everything. It's not about me, it's about you. And then they start paying attention. And you made another point too that was embedded in your conversation about professional associations or networking groups. It's hanging around where the competition isn't.
Mm-hmm.
That was very strategic. How many of you as members are going to venture capital association meetings or places where portfolio companies or wannabe portfolio companies are pitching their companies to the people with the funding? It's a good place to just hang around and get relationships. Other recruiters aren't going to be there. To get in industry groups, not your industry, the industry of where your bosses are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the senior level people hanging around? And you hang around there as well. You get to know the problems that they're facing and the pain, as I was talking about earlier. But also, you're going to go home with 5 cards, hopefully, with the bullets all over, just like you're talking about, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
Get involved.
Well, Pam, I want to make sure we're respecting your time in this process, but I've got one final question for you here, and that's obviously this is a job market and an environment, a recession like most have not seen before. What advice do you have for sort of overcoming adversity in a tough market like this? I think you know some members found themselves in the job market when they didn't expect to. Some members have been in the job market longer than they ever thought they would be, and it becomes tough. What advice do you have for them?
Well, good question. As I said, I've been through 4 recessions, and my clients are always getting jobs because they look at problems to be solved as opposed to job openings. In addition to is fine. They'll just be very competitive. The job openings will be right now. So if you look at problems to be solved, during adversity, people are making money as well. It's following the money. Where is the money being made? And in any disaster, somebody's benefiting, I hate to say crassly, but just looking at some bigger picture trends, look at terrorism. Is anybody making money off of that? Is anybody making money off of security? Green, a need to have a cleaner world. Are people making? So if you look at trends, and right now, the companies that are looking for money, they're pinch points all along the way. There may be side, you look at the tax side, you look at the accounting side, you look at the publicly held company that has to make some investment decisions. You look at the institutional investors, look all 360 around what's going on, and who is benefiting by some of this? And or if they aren't, who should be benefiting? So it's repositioning. So if your own industry is hurting and you don't see any growth or potential within your own industry, look 360 around you first, that referral triangle, and see if there are places that you should be considering and talking to them about work to be done. That, plus your network and your handshakes, will get you the conversations and will eventually land you the type of work that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, Pam, thank you so much. Again, everyone, I've been speaking with Pam Lassiter, the author of The New Job Security. And Pam, you've got a new version of the book coming out. When is that planned for?
In September. It's on Amazon right now. And if people want the 32% discount, they can sign up right now. But it'll have the social networking piece in it, too, that we've been talking about.
Okay.
Because that's changing how people communicate dramatically, as you're saying, too.
Very good. So the new version's coming out in September, and they can go on Amazon and find it. So again, folks, that's The New Job Security by Pam Lassiter. Pam, thanks again. We really appreciate you investing the time with our members. All right, folks, thanks for listening. And until next time, this is David Kohanek for Job Search Digest.